Welcome to the Politics of Everything. I'm Amber Danes, your host and podcast producer. This is a half hour of power, a podcast dropping every week where I unpack the politics of everything, from money to motherhood, nutrition to narcissism, startups to secularism, the environment, quality, and much, much more. Our guests are seasoned in the field or topic of their choice, even if you've not heard of them yet. This is a non-partisan show. So while I love exploring varied views and get a buzz from a healthy debate of ideas, this is not a purely blue, white, green program. Please subscribe, tune in, and enjoy the politics of everything. Before we begin, this episode does delve into mental health issues, so it comes with a listener warning. Vanessa Stewart is the founder, director, and CEO of Total You Coaching, and she's on a mission to empower individuals to lead powerful and passionate lives, especially if they're struggling with anxiety. She understands that anxiety can be a significant obstacle in living a full life, and she specializes in helping people overcome it. Vanessa is dedicated to guiding you towards a life that aligns with your core values, not only as addresses your anxiety, but also ignites a sense of purpose within you. Vanessa firmly believes that everyone deserves to wake up each day with enthusiasm and confidence. She has a range of tools, support, and expertise to help others in anxiety management. So let's find out how she helps others overcome anxiety and, of course, succeed in life. So welcome to the Politics of Everything, Vanessa.
Thank you very much for having me. It's great to be here with you today, Amber.
Podcasting remotely can be challenging, but it doesn't have to be. Since day one of the Politics of Everything, I have relied on Zencastr's all-in-one solution to make the process quick and painless, the way it should be for those of us who just love great content and want to get our ideas out into the world. If you know me, I'm obsessed with quality in terms of my guests, my sound, and everything about my show has to be great the first time. I'm time poor. It's so easy to use Zencastr. I'm not tech savvy and you don't need to be either. There's nothing to download. Just click on the link and off we go. Zencastr is all about making your podcasting experience easy, and with everything from local recording to automate post-productions now in their toolkit, you don't have to leave your browser to get that episode done and done fast. I have a special offer for you, and I hopefully you can experience what I have with Zencastr. Go to zencastr.com/pricing and use my VIP code, the politics of everything, all lowercase and one word, to get 30% off your first 3 months of Zencastr Professional. How good is that? I want you to have the same easy experiences I do for all my podcasting and content needs. It's time to share your story. So we had a little chat before the show. You mentioned your background is in teaching. Is that something you thought you'd do as a kid growing up? Like, what was your early career story?
In actual fact, what I actually wanted to do was be a doctor. So
there you go.
But teaching was always something that was sort of sitting there as a like a backup plan, like if I didn't get the marks and those sorts of things. Little did I know, I wasn't even slated at that point in time to finish year 12. So my family didn't allow that, and I didn't finish year 12 and didn't get what is now known as the HSC at the time. So
what did you end up doing in that sort of, I guess, post-school period?
Everything and anything. To be honest with you, I fell into lots of my early work opportunities. So I picked onions and potatoes and worked in sales, and then I became a legal secretary. And then I've been married twice, but sort of as my second marriage fell apart, I went, I've got to have something more stable for myself and the two little ones. And so that was where I went to uni finally and became a teacher and found my passion for all of the things that I do now.
Absolutely. Well, that's a great backstory. I love to get to know where people have come from, because often it shapes a lot of, I guess, where you're at now, but also, I guess, your skill set and the things that kind of ignite you, as you put it and I mentioned in the bio. So what is your own experience with anxiety, if you don't mind sharing that? And how have you learned to, if not manage it, navigate it, whichever words you want to use, to actually make sure that it is not debilitating and that you can still help yourself and help others?
Absolutely. Look, I think it's one of those things. For a long time, I actually didn't even realize that I had anxiety, because I came from such a traumatic childhood. As I built a life for myself, I just felt like I was trapped in that, sort of carrying the past with me. I didn't realize that that's actually what it was. And so what I found is that my early experiences of anxiety ended up being about control for me. So,
and was that something that you discovered perhaps in your 20s? Like, what stage of life were you at when you really could sort of pinpoint it was underlying anxiety that was fueling some of that behavior?
Look, probably not until I was in my 30s at least. And even just in this last year, I've had another relapse of what impact that's been having in my life. So
it's a work in progress by the sounds of it. And do you have some sort of like, without wanting to sort of share all the things you might be doing, but, you know, is there some things that you think help you particularly manage it? Because recognizing it's the first step, right? And then, of course, it's how we navigate and manage that and maybe overcome some of those senses of anxiety or periods of anxiety. Is there something for you? Is it around exercise? Is it mindfulness? Is it switching off? Like, how do you really do those things?
I became that high functioning anxious person. So for me, it was about how busy can I keep myself and not have any downtime. And that was my coping mechanism. Not sure it was necessarily the best in the longer term, but it enabled me to build a life where from the outside, people who looked at me thought that I was successful. I managed to do my teaching degree. Before I went did my teaching degree, I ran my own family daycare. And then, as I said, I moved into teaching, had two little ones and have been a single mum for many, many, many years and just got on with it and did that. And I became coach of the football team and the basketball team and the this and the that. And
so full of anxiety but able to function, as you put it. So, and exactly. I guess, does that get to a point, I think a lot of people who might suffer from high-functioning anxiety and other mental health issues would recognize that. Often that all comes crashing down at some point, right? Like that doesn't last is what
and
I'm understanding.
That's actually exactly what happened in this last year for me. There was a couple of events that happened that were totally out of my control. And again, I go back, that control thing is still a work in progress, that it just re-triggered all of that for me. Mm-hmm. And I had to go back to basics and really now I have to heal. And that's probably the thing that I've really realized in this last 12 months, particularly, is that I had to heal rather than just cope so that I could live. For a lot of times I was existing. And I think that's what a lot of people with anxiety do.
I was going to say that would be something you'd recognize obviously in others. And, you know, even without a background in psychology or formal training, your lived experience would help you with that. How do you actually help your clients with some of their challenges? Because I imagine it looks different for different people. For you, it was around busyness and control was a coping mechanism. Other people might have inertia and the inability to do anything. That's
absolutely
very different.
It is very much an individual how it displays. And the problem as such, I don't love the word problem, but the reason anxiety can be so difficult is that it can change one day or even within a day. We can start our day with what I was, that high functioning anxiety, but there was times when I would be coming home then and I would be, as you said, I would be totally debilitated. I would do what I had to do, but then I'd crash in a heap
every
night, just ready to get up and cope again and exist again. So,
and I imagine even like, I suppose, I don't know what your sleep patterns have been like, but you know, if you had like, you know, 7 or 8 hours sleep, whatever the norm is for you, you'd still imagine challenge yourself and kind of go, oh my goodness, I still don't feel well rested, but I have to get on with it and keep pushing yourself. Is that
absolutely
sort of some of the things you recognize?
Oh, totally. My lack of sleep, I didn't sleep well. I didn't always eat well. I didn't communicate well was one of the big things.
Interesting.
It was really interesting, especially as I've pulled it apart now that my kids are a bit older, so they're not so like minute to minute dependent on me. And I think that's what sort of over the last few years has led to part of the last 12 months is that I actually couldn't be quite so busy, at least mentally.
Mm. That's good to recognize. And it sounds like, you know, for anyone experiencing anxiety, you know, the title of this episode, of course, is about overcoming anxiety. Is that something you think you can do, or do you have a different way of framing it? And any kind of examples which you think illustrate how the sort of, I guess, the other side of anxiety can look?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, for me, I don't love the term overcoming anxiety, because before anxiety was a diagnosed condition, anxiety was really just known as fear and being scared and all those sorts of things. But it's actually a really normal feeling to have. And the problem we've developed in society at the moment is we treat anxiety as a thinking disorder, but it's actually a feeling disorder.
And explain that a little bit for us. Like, yeah, when people might be confused by that, if that makes sense.
Absolutely, absolutely. So anxiety, sort of, if we go back, let's go back in actual fact to the caveman days, when sort of flight or fight kicked in, when you're being chased by a lion or sort of you're out looking for your dinner and those sorts of things.
And that was a survival 101
correct
thing.
It's,
yeah,
survival. And so those feelings and those things are really, really good to have. The problem becomes is that we've now lived in a society that we are so, there's so much instant gratification and there's so many different expectations on us, both physically, mentally, emotionally. We're expected to do all and be all, and we get stuck in our head and we don't feel things. Mm. And the problem is anxiety actually sits in your amygdala, which is that feeling part of your brain, not the thinking part of your brain.
And which explains why you feel a certain way, but then the physical manifestations of things like, you know, some people it's sweaty palms, sometimes it's the inability to use your voice or feeling like your heart's racing, those sorts
correct
of things is what you feel in your body, but like you say, it's not necessarily just happening cognitively for you, it's part of your feelings as well.
In actual fact, sort of, it's the what we try to do then is when we have those feelings, we try and think, how do I fix this?
Oh, but yeah, and I'm very sort of action biased focused, so I relate to that. It's
me
like,
too.
How can this be over, yeah, so that we can get on to the next thing, which doesn't always work.
And that's how I became the high functioning anxious person.
Yeah,
I just wanted to get on with it. Okay,
absolutely.
Great. I feel crappy now. I sort of this has happened, and I feel loose, and I want to vomit, and I want to pass out. And no, don't have time for that. Let's just get on with it.
Yeah. Wow. That's incredible. I love the fact that you've really like drawn that apart for us, because I think anxiety gets bundled into this whole assumption of what it is. And
yeah,
then, you know, even if you've experienced it or you are experiencing it, it'd be very hard for you to really forensically know what's happening. That makes
yeah
sense.
And look,
yeah,
and it's taken me a lot of years of both me training, like as me being able to go back and sort of do all of that training around sort of coaching and in therapy myself. So there's a time and a place for all sorts of different interventions for anxiety, but it's remembering that it's generally feelings that come first.
Yeah, absolutely.
So for someone that's experiencing that anxiety, it's being able to identify the feeling. Sometimes there's an event, actually most of the time, there's an event that causes that feeling. And that's often when we find people who become chronically anxious or severely anxious and it's debilitating. It's because in actual fact they've felt that fear, they've felt that feeling so often that their nervous system has now become irregulated, it's dysregulated.
Yeah, absolutely. So in being able to recognize your own anxiety triggers, if you like, is there benefit to doing that, and how do you do that? Because there's the obvious things like major life events, like, you know,
correct,
a relationship breakdown, a death, moving house, all those big ticket items, losing a job. But in everyday life, people who are managing anxiety, there are smaller things which could happen in their day.
Absolutely. And the problem we have is that for most people with developed anxiety, it's actually been events that have happened during their childhood that have put them in this situation where they now feel anxiety.
Which feels very Freudian as saying that, doesn't it? Because, you know,
like
there's a lot of, when you go through therapy, and I've been through cognitive behavior therapy in various stages of my life and managed anxiety as well.
Yes.
They always want to ask you about your childhood, and sometimes it feels like, oh, but now I'm like 40 something. Why am I talking about my childhood? You know,
yeah,
like it's hard to know why you have to share that.
There's a great podcast, actually Mel Robbins does a great podcast as well around, and there's an episode she does with Dr. Russell, I can't pull his surname out of my, but if you Googled it, you'd find it. And he talks about the fact that you have to actually, when you experience trauma as a child, you don't get angry at a parent or at somebody else, you actually get angry at yourself. Because you don't, you love your parents.
Mm.
And so it doesn't actually take big, big events like moving house and deaths and things like that. It can be small things. It can be, I've had a nightmare and I've gotten up and my mum or dad weren't there, didn't react the way that maybe my nervous system needed them to. And so that feeling then becomes ingrained in our nervous system.
Yeah, and that's really good to know.
To go back, yeah, sometimes. So,
absolutely.
But I suppose I digressed a little bit from about being able to recognize the tools,
triggers, and those triggers set you off. Yeah,
yeah. For me, one of the biggest things that I find is when you feel anxious, and I focus on that feeling of being anxious, is being able to identify it, even naming it. I've got a big red hot fireball in my chest.
So being able
to identify that feeling and where it sits then actually gives you something you can do with it. It also actually gives you a way to be able to measure. So we use some of those thinking tools to be able to manage the feeling. So yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah. So we think, use those thinking tools, but we can't think our way out of the actual anxiety. The only way to actually be able to not feel anxious anymore is to actually heal wherever those anxious feelings are coming from.
So that leads to my next question, which you've started to answer, which is around, you know, in the idea of, you know, overcoming or moving through anxiety, those self-management techniques that we all have heard of in the last few years, particularly during the pandemic, to help ourselves, you know, with things we can't control, like mindfulness. For me, exercise and diet and all of that's super important to me. It probably comes down to my control factors too, but I just feel better. I just feel better and I have endorphins and I feel like that coping ability is better.
Definitely.
And I need it like I need to brush my teeth every day. It's that kind of thing for me. But external factors, like you talk about finding purpose, which is a relatively new term for a lot of people in the Western world, in workplaces and so forth. Is that just as important to feel like you're doing okay? It feels like there's a short-term thing and there's like a long-term thing happening all at once.
Absolutely. I totally agree with it. That's a great way to think about it. So meditation, sort of mindfulness, being able to manage our diet and exercise and our general overall physical well-being, they're our coping strategies is the way that I like to think about them. So they're the things that help us get through the day-to-day and manage that. But our purpose is actually what tends to be able to initiate us actually healing whatever it is that's causing that anxiety. And so when we find our purpose in life or our purpose for not wanting to feel that way anymore, then all of a sudden we can actually do the work we need to do, because it can be really, really scary to be able to go, okay, sort of I experienced this traumatic event as a child.
And some people might have blocked that out, right, depending on what the event is. You know, you not even have this vivid moment, you go, that was the moment, you know, that that this started. Yeah.
And that's actually one of the things I often do with the people I work with, is that you don't actually have to relive the trauma.
Mm. Yeah.
You don't need to do that. And someone that tells you that you must relive it isn't always accurate. Okay. You just need to be able to identify what the feelings are. And then those were the feelings that at this point in time were generated by an event. You don't have to be able to go back and go and actually go through the whole thing again. So
yeah, like not like a movie where they have the flashbacks.
Correct. Scene. Yeah, you don't. You definitely. And who wants to go back?
Exactly. And that's probably the uncomfortableness people feel like when that's been asked of them. But I guess if it's sold to you as this is the only way to feel better and you are in a place of chronic anxiety, or, you know, it's just your life is falling apart, you can you can be overwhelmed by what needs to be done, and you need someone to really guide you often. I think that's
exactly right. And that's the thing I would definitely say is being able to have someone with you to go through it. And the biggest person you can have with you to go through it with you is yourself. And so you talked about sort of like we were talking about what self-managed techniques are like. My favorite one is probably drawing and journaling. I'm a terrible, terrible artist though. So
it's not going to be turned into a book anytime soon.
No, definitely not. So because I've been able to use that combination of wellness strategies and healing strategies, when I'm in those quiet moments where I need to do a little bit more delving myself, I do what they call neurographic art, which is just shapes and random lines and then coloring.
Mm.
And with a purpose though, with the thoughts that go with it. And it's where we again put that thinking in with the feeling, which enables us to help overcome those. And then I journal as well.
So for you, what's been, I guess, it's probably several life lessons, but the biggest life lesson that you think's had the biggest impact on you and why?
I think for me, definitely, I was thinking about this before, and actually it's been something that I've been dwelling on these last 12 months during the next phase of my journey, is that I can't control everything and everyone. But out of that is, in actual fact, I don't want to, because if I control everything and everyone, I take away so many magical moments that make life enjoyable and exciting and all the things that make us live life rather than just exist.
Absolutely. I love that. How do you define your own version of success these days?
I love this question. You hear various versions of it. And for me, it's one that I ponder often, and I must admit it's one that has changed significantly as I grew older and older. So for me, it's definitely become, it's about fulfilling. And we go back to your previous question about purpose. It's about fulfilling my life purpose. And for me, my life purpose is being able to help people live the best life they can by being the truest version of themselves.
And our final question for you today is around the politics of overcoming anxiety. Of course, just a takeaway message to sort of sum up the final thoughts for anyone listening today.
Yeah. I think for me, I know. Don't get caught up in the politics of having just to exist and just cope and live a life that you have with anxiety. Don't live a mediocre life. You can heal and you can live that most amazing life and achieving things that you can't even possibly imagine yet, when you don't have to live with that sense of anxiety and dread.
Thank you so much for your time today. And if you do want to connect further with Vanessa, there are details on the show notes. Until next time, be well. Thanks so much for listening today. If you've enjoyed the politics of everything, I thrive on your feedback. So please add a short review and share the podcast with your network through Apple, Spotify, and all the usual suspects. I'm always on the hunt for new and diverse guests, so if you or someone you know has a fresh idea you're busting to get out there, please email me at amber@amberdanes.com, and my crew will get back to you very soon.